Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. It's been over a year since the news broke that Hillary Clinton had used a private email server during her time as Secretary of State. Clinton has apologized for it, joked about it, dismissed it. But there is an ongoing investigation, outcome unknown, and it's dragging into the heart of the campaign season. This hour on Point, what's going on with the FBI investigation into Hillary Clinton's emails? You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. Are you like Bernie Sanders, sick and tired of the damned emails, or eager for a conclusion, whatever it may be? Later this hour, we'll look at how one newspaper sees a Trump presidency faux front page from a year from now, imagining headlines under Donald Trump's presidency and Trump's angry response. But first, Hillary Clinton's email. Over time, she has responded in many ways, including this was last August at a press conference in Las Vegas. Wow, this is dragged on. Hillary Clinton kind of trying to quip it away, laugh it off.
You were the official in charge. Did you wipe the server?
What, like with a cloth or something?
I don't know.
Well, no. Yeah.
Did you wipe the server with a cloth or something? Ha ha. In the first Democratic debate on CNN in October, Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders weighed in on Hillary Clinton's emails.
Let me say something that may not be great politics, but I think the secretary is right. And that is that the American people are sick and tired of hearing about your damn emails.
Thank you. Me too.
And all these months later, on Fox News just yesterday, Chris Wallace interviewed President Obama and asked the president if he could guarantee that Hillary Clinton would not be protected in any way politically during the investigation.
That is institutionally how we have always operated. I do not talk to the Attorney General about pending investigations. I do not talk to FBI directors about pending investigations. We have a strict line and always have maintained it, previous
so,
presidents.
Just to button this up.
I guarantee it. I guarantee that there is no political influence in any investigation conducted by the Justice Department or the FBI, not just in this case, but in any case.
And she will be
full stop, period.
The president guarantees it, full stop, period. And yet we are in the thick of a campaign season and people want to know. Joan Vinaki joins me right now, columnist at the Boston Globe. Her latest column is headlined, "Why is the FBI so slow on Clinton email probe?" You can link to Joan's column at our website, onpointradio.org. Joan Vinaki, welcome back to On Point. It's great to have you here.
Thank you. Nice to be here, Tom.
So you heard, like many of us did, James Comey, director of the FBI, saying, was it just very recently in Buffalo, I think, that there wasn't a big hurry. I mean, there was urgency, but the most important thing is to get it right. Okay, here we are. It's now April. The voting, the conventions are coming. The voting is coming. How are you thinking about this, Joan?
Well, when I wrote that column, I think I was taking it, I was frustrated from the perspective of just an average voter, I think.
Mm-hmm.
This has been, I guess, I realize that investigations take a long time. There are thousands and thousands of emails. The FBI got access to the server last August. But as you just said, the convention is July. The primaries are going ahead. Clinton has a trust problem with voters, and I think voters are right to wonder, is this cloud going to be here? Is it ever going away? What's the conclusion here?
Here's Comey. This was at the FBI's Buffalo office on Tuesday last week, saying he didn't feel pressured to complete the investigation before the summer conventions, that, you know, got to do it right.
We will always do it well, and we aspire to do investigations promptly. But if we have to choose between the two, well obviously comes first.
Well comes first. So, of course, everybody should want a good and proper and thorough investigation of this. Do you see something out of line with the FBI director's way of approaching this? Oh, yes, we want it prompt, but thorough or well comes first.
No, I mean, I'm not the expert on where the FBI is in this investigation right now. But if we just kind of loop back for a moment to what President Obama said yesterday in that interview on Fox News,
mm-hmm.
he said, there's this line, and I don't talk to the FBI. Well, he just did, didn't he, in that interview? I mean, James Comey heard what the president said, as well as the millions of Americans who are listening.
What do you mean by that exactly?
Well, what I mean is the president said yesterday she has not jeopardized America's national security.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of making a statement about intent.
That's kind of the issue here.
That's kind of the issue. And he is communicating something to millions of Americans, and I assume that James Comey may be one of them. So he's kind of having it both ways in a way, I think. He's saying he's not interfering, but here is President Obama's view of what happened here. So bottom line, this is political, however it plays out. If they decide to indict, yes, my gosh, I mean, that's how can we have a nominee of a party that's under indictment?
Under indictment. Mm.
Right. If they come out and say no indictment, the other side will just assume that politics played a role in this. So it's kind of lose-lose. So I guess, again, bottom line, I agree with Harvey Silverglade, who I quoted in my column.
This is a defense attorney, well-known criminal defense attorney.
Who says there's a moral obligation, there's a professional obligation, there's an ethical obligation to come to a conclusion ASAP and take the cloud from over Hillary Clinton's head, not because of Hillary Clinton, but because the voters, America deserves to know.
I mean, people are making decisions in primaries all over the place right now. And, of course, you know, the Sanders and Clinton supporters are going at it hammer and tongs. How does it play out in your mind, whether whatever they have to say, whether it comes sooner or later? If it comes tomorrow, what does that mean? If it comes in July in the middle of the convention, if it comes in October on the eve of voting?
One thing that I think the media have learned from this election is that trying to predict what's going to happen on either side is
never mind prediction, but
how does
lands.
It play out?
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's look at it from Bernie Sanders' perspective for a moment. He's kind of had the best of both worlds. He had that extraordinarily gracious moment in the debate where he said, "We're sick and tired of your damn email," and Hillary Clinton cheered, and Hillary Clinton supporters cheered.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, so he's kind of taken the high road.
At least for a while. He doesn't care. We don't care. Fine.
Right.
Not in Republican circles, I must say.
Right. But on his side.
Mm-hmm.
But as it gets, as he, I think, senses potential for victory, he's sort of said the investigation should continue and said that he's not saying that there should be no investigation.
Mm-hmm. She's not wiping it off the table anymore in quite that same big flourish way.
Right. I mean, from the Sanders perspective, if tomorrow or in a week or so the FBI came out and said, "We've looked at this and she's not a target and the investigation
mm-hmm.
is off,"
mm-hmm.
I personally think that would solidify support behind Hillary Clinton.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of the uncertainty around her campaign right now is what's going to happen with this. I mean, it's something that that people are just sort of thinking about.
Do you think there's a significant number, let's stay with Democrats for a second because the primaries are still on there, a significant number of Democrats who may be pro-Hillary or leaning toward or even fully on pro who somewhere in the back of their mind actually worry?
Yes, I do. I mean, I've heard it from campaign operative types who mm-hmm. say that even loyal Hillary supporters say kind of sort of half jokingly, "Do you think she can be indicted?"
What would that mean if that happened in the middle of the convention?
Overdone, wouldn't it be?
I don't know. she could say, "Well, it's yes, but it's on this minor thing that really is
hard to."
That's it. Bernie's the.
I don't know. I just I was waiting to come on mm-hmm. this show. I was just reading some tweet that somebody put out about Jeb Bush's former spokesman saying that Hillary could beat Trump from jail, but.
Okay.
I don't know about that.
See how well Jeb Bush did, even on the trail. What if it comes later, Joan? What if it comes in the fall?
It's just not fair. My whole point mm-hmm. in writing that column mm-hmm. was, and I don't want to disappoint you, I really don't know how it plays out.
I'm not asking for predictions, but if it comes in the fall, how does that land?
I think it's devastating. I mean, a candidate running for president of the United States under indictment saying, "Oh, it's just a minor thing." I mean, a criminal indictment, has it happened before? I don't think so.
Hillary Clinton still sort of sweeping this away. Here she was on Friday on the Today Show with Matt Lauer asking her how she sees the investigation into her email ending.
It's a security review. It is a security review. And there are lots of those that are conducted in our government all the time. And you don't hear about most of them. You hear about this one because, you know, it does involve me. So that's why it gets so much attention.
It's a security review. No big deal. Nothing to see here. Move along, move along. Joan Vernocchi, please stand by for a second. Joining us right now from Washington is Del Wilber, covers the Justice Department for the Los Angeles Times. Del, thank you very much for being with us today.
Hi, Tom.
Can you just remind us exactly what is being investigated here?
Yeah, so back in last summer, you know, Hillary Clinton disclosed, or the New York Times in March published this story about how Hillary Clinton had used this private email server during her whole tenure, doing both private and work-related emails on her ClintonMail.com account. And that comes out, people get dizzy about it. Inspector generals from the State Department, the intelligence community begin reviewing it, and they find that in her work-related correspondence, which she printed up and turned over, like 30,000 emails, to investigators or to the State Department to process for public records reasons, in reviewing these emails, they found some that were, they believe, are classified now. So they refer to the Justice Department saying, hey, we need you to do a security review of this to make sure nothing classified slipped out. That has morphed into a criminal investigation into whether she, her aides, or others mishandled classified material, which is a fairly big deal, by using this system that was outside normal State Department channels. A key thing to remember is, if she had been communicating some of this classified material, which was not marked as classified at the time, if she had been communicating this material over her StateDepartment.com account, if she'd actually used that, she'd be in the same pot. I mean, it's, you can only use classified material in, like, secure settings, in SCIFs, on internal networks that can't be hacked, although they probably are, and that kind of thing.
Del, Hillary Clinton has said many times that there was nothing here that was marked classified. Is that the key thing, or does it matter if it was marked or not?
No, it does not matter if it's marked or not.
Really?
However, it matters to prosecutors when they're proving a case. So, like, as your able guest earlier had said, was that a lot of this is intent. What was her intent? Did she intend to mishandle classified material in this way, cavalier way?
Del, stand by if you'd be good enough. We have to take a short break right here. Del Wilber with the Los Angeles Times. He's all over the Justice Department and this story. Joan Vernocchi, great columnist for the Boston Globe, with us in the studio. You can join us this hour. What do you think? Was Bernie Sanders right? Are you sick and tired of hearing about her damn emails? Or are you worried they could still somehow, one way or another, become a big deal in this campaign? This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about Hillary Clinton, the email issue, and how and when this gets resolved. Del Wilber is with us. He covers the Justice Department for the Los Angeles Times. Joins us from Washington. Joan Vernocchi is with me in the studio, columnist at the Boston Globe, writes about national politics. Headline on hers last week, why is the FBI so slow on Clinton email probe? How long does this go, she says. You can join us this hour. Do you understand why the FBI is taking so long to investigate this? Does it tell you they're being political or apolitical, being very careful, methodical, or dragging their feet? Are you worried that this is going to end up right in the middle of the convention or even in the middle of voting this fall somehow? On the campaign trail, Bernie Sanders says others are sick and tired of the damn emails, but Republicans aren't, and you can well imagine how they're thinking if this comes out in the thick of campaigning. Here in an interview with ABC News last month, Donald Trump said if he were nominating Supreme Court justices, he would nominate ones that would look seriously at Hillary Clinton's email scandal.
What she's getting away with is absolutely murder. You talk about a case. Now, that's a real case. Now, nothing seems to be happening, but you can also poll people on that and you see what happens on that, because that is a real case. And if she's able to get away with that, you can get away with anything.
Well, it's a real investigation. We'll see. Last month, Attorney General Loretta Lynch testified at a Justice Department oversight hearing. Republican Senator John Cornyn of Texas questioned her about the FBI investigation into those emails.
Doesn't the buck stop with you in terms of whether to proceed to seek an indictment, to convene a grand jury, and to prosecute a case that's referred to you by the FBI?
There's many levels of review at various stages of a case, and so I would not necessarily be involved in every decision as to every prosecutorial
right.
step to
it
make.
It would be you or somebody who works for you, correct?
Everyone in the Department of Justice works for me, including the FBI, sir.
Everybody works for me. Del Wilber, what's the history here? It may even be old history, but the president says he absolutely guarantees no political use of the FBI. To people like you who cover justice and the FBI, does that make sense?
Well, I think that your earlier guest, Joan, made a really good point with what the president was saying during that interview.
Mm-hmm.
I can almost see a defense lawyer using that as like a character witness or something if she's ever charged.
I mean, in her favor or against
her? In her favor. Mm-hmm. Well, the president of the United States says, I don't think she was intending to do that.
But they could say this corrupted the jury, every jury in the land, or, you know.
Yes. But what's interesting, too, is that I think Comey, James Comey, you know, he's, mm-hmm. he's a Republican, former deputy attorney general. He's the guy that stood up to, you know, the White House when they wanted Ashcroft on his, you know,
yep.
hospital bed to review the warrantless wiretapping
yep.
measures.
Principled stand.
Yes, and I don't think he cares about the politics of it. I think he really does believe that he's doing this case as expeditiously as he can and for the right reasons, and he wants the investigation to be completed when the investigation is completed. It's a complicated thing. Like, people don't understand, oh, review the emails, take a look at it. Well, one, you have to get all the emails. Then you have to make sure you know what the emails are actually saying. Like, it's not coded language, it's not whatever, and there are 30,000 work-related emails
yeah.
to review.
Yeah.
Then you have to interview people who set up the server, who dealt with Clinton, because she's not going to say, yes, I intended to mishandle those emails, and I wanted to subvert the classified process to make it easier for
well, she's not going to say that to
the Chinese got it. No, she's not going to say that.
But she's not going to say that to the people who work for her either.
You don't know,
go over there and subvert the national security.
Well, they could say, you know, I've seen it in many cases. They could be like, well, Clinton told me we had to do this because we couldn't, we needed to act quickly, and we knew the risks. Well, you know, that goes against her, right? They interview all those people.
Could you just clarify, I'm not saying there's anything here, I have no idea, but what is the potential crime? What if there were charges, what would they? What might they look like?
Well, there's a felony count, and then there's a misdemeanor count. Now, remember, David Petraeus.
A count of what?
Of mishandling classified material. There's a official, you can look up.
Okay, like and what USB. Constitutes mishandling, so we understand?
Well, there's gross negligence. There's, intentionally, mishandling classified material in a way that it gets into the hands of like another power. There are all kinds.
Is it mishandling if it wasn't explicitly banned by State Department rules during the time she was doing it? Because she and others say it wasn't.
Right. No, that's what her argument would be for sure.
Well, does that push the potential charges off the table because it wasn't against the regs?
No, I mean like classified material. Okay, you're confusing two things. One,
okay.
The use of the private email was not exclusively banned, right?
Okay.
But you're not supposed to be handling classified material even on your State Department email account.
Yeah, okay.
Right? You have
okay.
a separate whole system for that.
Okay.
And so if she was using Hillary.Clinton at mm-hmm. state.gov, that is the exact same as the Hillary Clinton email thing in terms of handling classified
okay.
material.
Okay, okay.
Got mm-hmm. it. So they could do these various things. And what's really interesting is when you talk to legal experts about it all, is that like they compare? Like, look what happened to David Petraeus, right? He's CIA director. He's this former great general in Afghanistan and Iraq.
Yep.
He has a mistress who happens to have top secret clearance, but
yeah.
that's irrelevant.
Mm-hmm.
He gives her his battle diaries and all this stuff with all the secret stuff in it so she could write a biography of him.
And it right? hits the fan.
And hit the fan, took 3 years, he got a misdemeanor.
Yeah.
And that is a lot more egregious, these experts I've talked to said, legal experts, former prosecutors, than Clinton emailing information that was not clearly identified as classified at the time, to aides who would have been cleared to have the classified information anyway. It's a different level.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
If you can only get Petraeus on a misdemeanor, how are you going to get Clinton on a felony? I think it's a big leap.
Joan, jump in here. I mean, Comey says we want to do it right, and Dell says he's not political.
Right, and I cast no aspersions on James Comey. I don't know him, although with a little Boston cynicism about the FBI and how things can sometimes get very political when you look way back here between
Whitey Bulger,
Whitey Bulger, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
And again, I mean, Dell has done all the great reporting, and I read a really good piece today on Politico, which lays out the different laws and how they may and may not apply.
Mm-hmm.
And the point that they made about Petraeus is that the information that he gave his mistress access to what had been already classified as classified, and then
okay.
he lied about it under oath,
okay.
and that complicated it and helps to make the case why he was prosecuted, and so far Hillary Clinton hasn't. But
and after all that, it's a misdemeanor for him, and here we have Hillary.
Bottom line, the laws seem so cloudy. They seem very vague. Very few people are prosecuted for this.
Yeah.
So I mean, with the Secretary of State, yeah, there should be a high bar. But again, to get back to what I was saying, can't we just do it Can't we just say if it's a crime or not? Can't they just reach a
settle
decision?
Settle it. How hard can it be? Let's go to our callers. Austin, Texas. Dana is calling. Dana, you're on the air with Del Wilbur and Joan Vinaki.
Oh, hi. My question is, I thought Colin Powell had his own personal email account, and why wasn't he investigated or being investigated now if that's an issue?
Yeah, I've heard the same thing. Del, what about it?
Well, I don't think both Rice and Powell had private email accounts.
Like you don't AOL think accounts. They did or they did?
No, they did. And mm-hmm. But they were used kind of as, my understanding was that they were used kind of as Ash Carter had been using his private email account would be. It's cumbersome to use the State Department account, so they transact some information between each other, but not to the extent where Clinton like replaced her State Department account with a private email account. And again, at the time, you were allowed to do this. The problem is not the private email. The problem is classified material ended up on a private email, which could have been vulnerable to, you know, foreign powers. But let's also be honest, the State Department system, I've read there's some audit report on it somewhere, you know, wasn't that secure either. So you shouldn't have been doing either. You shouldn't be talking about, you know, keyword or...
But is there a clear distinction between what Colin Powell did and Secretary of State Rice did and what Secretary of State Hillary Clinton did?
Well, I think what Clinton did would be like whatever. My understanding was they turned over some emails from Powell and Rice to the State Department. I'm not an expert on the previous Secretaries of State and their use of private email, but it was not the extent.
I don't think they would.
Clinton sent 30,000 work emails through ClintonEmail.com.
Right. I was just going to say, I don't think they were 30,000 of them.
She took it to
an extreme.
Scott in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. Scott, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Thanks. I've heard reports that the classified information that ended up being sent over the private email server was because Clinton ordered her subordinates to remove the label that said that it was a classified document so that it could be sent to her private server. And you know, there's so much misinformation out there with websites parroting themselves as you know, real news and not being able to discern what's true and what's not true. And one of my biggest concerns is that Hillary gets the nomination and they wait until the fall, you know, the week before the vote, and they throw this stuff out there. Everybody gets a hold of it, and it just sabotages the election, you know.
And this is Joan Vinaki's point in a way, Scott, and I appreciate your call. But, Joan, just that we, in a big democracy like this, we need this settled. We can't have this cloudy thing running around the middle of the heart of the function here.
It's a cloud over the electoral process, and I think the caller is exactly right. I mean, political enemies could just time it so that she wins the nomination, and suddenly there's this criminal indictment.
With us right now from New York is Jennifer Epstein, political reporter for Bloomberg News. She is covering Hillary Clinton and the Democratic primary. Jennifer, thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me on, Tom.
Have you heard Clinton people game this out, how they're going to handle different timings of something coming down? Do you sense there's a real concern within the Clinton camp that there could be actually an indictment or not?
No, I don't think that they're really that concerned about it. They are very confident that the arguments that have been out there for a long time kind of as to why she won't be indicted are correct. I think that they're probably going to start pointing to that Politico story that Joe mentioned earlier, which a really good reporter went through and looked at a lot of past cases that had some similarity and found that, generally speaking, those don't end up with indictments. And I think that the campaign surely is gaming out what would happen if, she were to be indicted before the Democratic convention, after the convention, you know, in October, you know, November 1st, I believe election day is November 10th. But one that's all been very much under wraps. There's been no sense from anybody that's actually like an active thing that her aides are talking about. And I would guess that it would be held very close if there were conversations. But on top of that, her aides are just very, you know, confident that this whole thing is ultimately going to pan out in her favor. I think that they would like it to be sooner rather than later, again, to kind of, you know, eliminate some of the risk from this issue and try to focus on other things. Uh, but but at the same time, they've done a pretty good job. You know, last summer, this was kind of the focus of every day of campaigning for her, was what's the latest development on the email.
Yeah.
You know, we have, in the press, were constantly asking her questions, you know, about what she knew and didn't know, and, you know, her intent. And that is largely gone from the day-to-day conversation. You know, obviously, there are these moments where it seems like the FBI is preparing to interview people, or
which they say they are right now.
Which they say they are, but at the same time, the Clinton campaign, as recently as last week, and I haven't checked in with them this morning, but has said that Secretary Clinton has not yet been contacted about an interview, and also that aides who were working, who are also on the campaign staff, people like Huma Abedin and Jake Sullivan, who are top aides to Clinton on her campaign, and were also top aides to her at the State Department, have not been contacted. And that could, you know, change by the day, by the minute, but, you know, that this process is still ongoing, and that it's not like people are preparing to go into interviews.
It's pretty wild. Jennifer Epstein, please stand by New York for a moment. We are looking at the long investigation of Hillary Clinton's emails, now stretching right into the heart of the presidential campaign. Let's get a call from Atlanta. Ben in Atlanta, thank you very much for calling.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me on. I just wanted to raise a question about political motivation, raise it to your panel this morning. Given the facts that we've all been discussing this morning, this whole thing seems very, very odd, the cloudiness of the law and how long it's taking to investigate and everything.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask, what would be the political motivation to drag this out, maybe? Like, who do you think is behind this? Is it as simple just to keep it an issue during the election, to keep it, have something they can throw at Hillary? Or is it something that they're holding in their back pocket to, like, if she was the nomination, now we have some information we're going to pull out of this, remind everyone about this distrust?
Yeah, Ben, let us pick it up. Let us pick it up right here. I mean, Joan, I don't know. You don't know? But, and Dell says, you know, Comey's pretty above board.
Comey may be totally above board, but that doesn't mean there are not other people out there. I don't want to feed some big conspiracy theory, but information does leak out. I guess if you wanted to have the most political harm, you would wait until Hillary Clinton became the nominee, and then sometime in September or closer to November, you would leak out some more damaging information about it.
But Dell, can't Loretta Lynch, as Attorney General, just in her proper capacity as Attorney General, if she sees a lagging investigation, never mind politics, can't she say, hey, get on the stick?
I think you guys are supposing that's a lagging investigation. And I don't, from my perspective, having watched a lot of federal investigations over the years, having covered federal law enforcement for, I don't know, 8 years, I mean, these things take a lot of time, no matter what kind of case it is. And so, in this case, if you're in the FBI, do you want to rush things and maybe miss something, say there's nothing, and then have it come out later that you missed it? That's worse than taking a long time, right? Secondly, if you want it, you're an FBI agent or you're a federal prosecutor, your job is to investigate potential crimes. You want to investigate them thoroughly, accurately, and to the full extent of the law. And so you can't be like, oh, I'm going to go fast on this, faster. We need to go faster. I think they're doing it, honestly, from the people I've talked to, I think they're going as fast as they can. And I don't think there's any win in the FBI Justice Department to have it drag out and then, oh, we're going to drop it in October. I mean, that'd be a nightmare for them. They'd be accused of plot-taking. If they do a slapshot investigation and get it done too quickly, they're going to get accused by the right of covering stuff up.
But, Dell,
so
what?
They can't win.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead, Jim.
Tom, it's your show. I apologize.
You go.
I'm just curious, why do you think, what's taking them so long to actually interview key players in this whole thing?
I think that they want, well, one, you know, there are dozens of people they want. I'm not speaking for them. My assumption would be, there are many more people to interview than probably that we're aware of. There is a key core of Clinton aides. When you do an investigation, you work concentrically, right? You start in the outer fringes and you work your way inwards to those people. And I was told by very reliable sources that a national security prosecutor a few weeks ago called lawyers representing those four or five top aides to Hillary Clinton and said, hey, be ready. We're going to be interviewing them soon. It's on the radar. Be ready for it. And that's not an exact quote, so, you know, don't hold me to that.
Yeah, we've seen that reported.
What they were saying.
You've reported. Yeah.
And, you know, that's an indication, too, that, this, you know, we're getting into these final stages. And it just, I think it just, like, you pull a thread, and like it's like reporting a story. and you pull a thread, and then you pull another thread, and they go, I got to make one more call to this person and do that. Yeah. I think that's what these investigations are like.
You know, it's just that this thread goes right into the heart of the national process of selecting an ex-president of the United States. I'm very glad to catch up with you today. Joan Vernocchi with the Boston Globe. Glad that you raised concern about the pace of this and where this may be going. I appreciate you being with us, Joan.
Nice to be here, Tom. Thank
Jennifer
you.
Jennifer Epstein, covering the Clinton campaign. Thank you so much for filling us in, Jennifer.
Thanks for having me.
And Del Wilbert, the Los Angeles Times, covering the Justice Department. Thank you, Del.
Thank you.
Trump, when we come back.
This On Point podcast and following message are brought to you by Goldman Sachs. For answers to the world's most pressing economic questions, from finance's role in addressing climate change to the implications of central bank policy decisions, tune in to Exchanges at Goldman Sachs, the firm's podcast. Each episode features in-depth discussions with some of the firm's leading experts on the markets, evolving industries, and the global economy. Subscribe to Exchanges at Goldman Sachs on iTunes, Stitcher, or SoundCloud. Or listen at gs.com/podcast.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. On Sunday, the Ideas section of the Boston Globe made a bold move and put out a mock front page pointedly designed to show how a Trump presidency might look a year from now in headlines. Headlines like deportations to begin, markets sink as trade war looms, and U.S. soldiers refuse orders to kill ISIS families. Well, where does this go? You can join us on air or online. What do you make of the Globe's view of Donald Trump's America, of publishing a satirical front page like this? Joining me now from Boston is Kathleen Kingsbury, Deputy Managing Editor of the Boston Globe's editorial page, editor of the paper's Ideas section. She won a Pulitzer last year for distinguished editorial writing. You can link to the Globe's Sunday editorial, The GOP Must Stop Trump, at our website, onpointradio.org. Kathleen Kingsbury, welcome back to On Point.
Hi, Tom.
Why did you do this, madam?
We did this really as an exercise in taking Donald Trump at his word. And frankly, his vision of America promises to be as appalling in real life as it is black and white on the page. We wanted readers to see some of the policy proposals that he is pledging to enact in the White House, what the logical conclusions of that were.
And let's just go through some of those. So your big headline is deportations to begin. President Trump calls for tripling of ICE force, you know, the immigration forces. Riots continue. Where do you imagine riots a year from now?
In the story itself, we discuss riots outside of the White House, outside the old post office building in D.C. But in reality, we're actually talking about riots in all cities. If Americans start seeing their neighbors hauled out of their houses, put on buses, sent to deportation camps, we suspect that most Americans will be troubled by that and will, unite to stop the president.
So let's just go in each of these, what you base this on. So, you know, Donald Trump is out today saying this is stupid, this is worthless. We'll hear that. But you've looked at his statements on the trail. You've got a huge banner headline here. You're imagining the future. What's the basis for this headline?
The basis of this headline is some of the language that Donald Trump has used in many of his speeches over time. We also have looked at his website and we've considered who his advisors are. And the reality is in all of these stories, we often use Donald Trump's words verbatim. And so the fact that he has called it stupid is essentially calling some of his own proposals stupid. And we think that, you know, this is really interesting because, frankly, we've also heard from some of his supporters who say, actually, this front page is the America that we want. This is, this is what we hope Donald Trump accomplishes. So someone is misinformed in this.
They can't want everything that's on this front page. The drop head here under the big banner, another subject says markets sink as trade war looms. And the lead that you've got there imagined again. This is a mock front page from a year from now that the Boston Globe put out as a kind of exercise in literal imagining. Trump statements on the campaign trail made manifest in a Trump presidency. Worldwide stocks plunged again Friday, completing the worst month on record as trade wars with both China and Mexico seem imminent. Justify that imagining, Kathleen.
Sure, of course. I mean, once again, I want to make sure that it's clear that this is political satire, but it is based in fact. And so we spoke with economists, policy analysts, we consulted business people. And what we heard is that if Donald Trump raises tariffs on China and Mexico the way that he is pledging, that we will see a trade war. And what that trade war looks like for most Americans is higher prices at the grocery store, at the gas pump, when they go to buy clothes for their children, on any goods that are produced in China and Mexico.
So there's another imagined future. And then we get into really, really tough stuff. U.S. soldiers refuse orders to kill ISIS families. Again, I want to make very clear, this is a satirical or a mock headline from an imagined future where Donald Trump is president. The Boston Globe's putting this out. Trump says it's stupid. And the lead here, the military faces a, quote, crisis of good order and discipline, Pentagon officials said yesterday, after days of widespread unrest in the ranks over White House orders to kill relatives of ISIS militants. They got more protests were planned in support of two Army Special Forces soldiers who disobeyed direct orders to kill everyone in an ISIS compound. It sounds, well, we remember Donald Trump saying, I heard him say, you've got to do it. You've got to kill the families.
Yes, absolutely. And the reaction to that from Pentagon officials, from the CIA, from, you know, generals in the Army was, our soldiers will not do that. They will not follow this order. So what happens when you have a military that frankly does not have faith in their commander-in-chief and will not follow his orders? It's the disorder that we describe in that article.
Barbara in London, Kentucky. Barbara, you're on here with the Boston Globe Deputy Managing Editor. You're on.
Hello.
Hello.
Yes, and thank you. Yes, and thank you for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I just heard a comment, and I can't recall the exact thing, but it had to do with the military refusing an order from, you know.
That's right, to kill ISIS families. This is imagined.
Yeah, president.
Yeah. What do you think?
And I find this very offensive and a slap in the face to our military that even something like that would even be, you know, hypothetically put out there. My son is a member of the military, and I highly respect our military through all the ages, and I think that the reason that this country is a great and holds the position of leadership that they did hold. And I just find this to me is unconscionable. That the Boston Globe would even put that out there.
To even imagine it. Let me ask you, Barbara, because Donald Trump has said on the campaign trail that, you know, to get ISIS to stand down, to get their attention, to get them to stop and retreat, we may need to kill family members. Now, do you think Americans following orders is very important in the military? I entirely agree. But do you think American soldiers should or would kill family members of ISIS leaders?
I think where he's coming from on that is because even with ISIS, some family members are, you know, they are part of ISIS, and they, you know, they may not, you know, be wearing the suicide vest, but they're contributing, and who knows, you know, who's doing what.
What if they were young children, Barbara? Just asking you.
I think this is just a bunch of hypothetical, to even say that our military would refuse an order, an order that would probably never even be put out there. But, you know, we've got to do something to stop ISIS. Do you know any other presidential candidate that has any plan to stop ISIS? If you do, I'd like for this to be a part of your program. You tell me about it.
Barbara, I appreciate your call. Kathleen Kingsbury, these are hypothetical. What are you doing hanging them on even a mock front page here? And it's insulting for the Boston Globe to suggest that the U.S. military members might refuse orders.
I think when you're talking about killing civilians, because that's what most of these families are, women and children who have no choice on whether or not they are part of the ISIS movement, that's a war crime. And that's what Donald Trump is advocating for. And so we've heard from military officials, Michael Hayden, who have said, absolutely not. We will not follow these orders.
Here's Trump responding at a rally in Rochester, New York yesterday to the work of Kathleen Kingsbury and her colleagues at the Boston Globe.
How about that stupid Boston Globe? It's worthless. Sold for a dollar.
Did you see that story? The whole front page, they made up a story that Trump, they pretended Trump is the president. And they made up the whole front page is a make-believe story, which is really no different from the whole paper for the whole thing. I mean, the whole thing is no different.
Donald Trump going hammer and tongs at the Boston Globe in reaction there. What about Trump's response, Kathleen?
You know, we really weren't surprised. I mean, is anyone surprised that that's the reaction that he has? You know, it's more kind of empty rhetoric and very few details. That said, we made sure that the Trump campaign had received several copies of this this front page. In fact, almost 100 copies of the front page, so that he had a chance to respond. And we really didn't know what to expect, but we feel really pleased. We stand by our editorial, and we feel really pleased that we've sparked a conversation and that we hope that Trump's comments will just further that conversation.
Marina in Woodbury, Connecticut. Marina, you're on the air. Thank you for calling. What do you think?
Hi, Thomas. I loved the Boston Globe's article. I read every single one on the page. I felt like, you know, they're taking Donald Trump's statements and they're putting them into, you know, a context of reality. I don't think that the article on, like, the military refusing that order is rude to the military at all. I feel like that is the moral road to go. You know, I would never want our military to kill innocent women and children. I mean, I'm pretty sure that was considered a war crime. And, you know, I wouldn't want to see my neighbors taken from their homes either.
What do you think about a serious news organization trafficking in imagined future things that they can't know for sure are ever going to happen, even if it's done in a mock way? Is that an appropriate role for a substantial newspaper?
Well, I'm pretty sure she said, like, yeah, they've, you know, said it's satirical, but they're based in facts. They've consulted, you know, economists. And they've taken Donald Trump's words, his plans, not that he's really given us any policy answer.
But take the man at his word, you say, and I guess the Globe has, in a way, done that. But then they've imagined something. Donald Trump calls it stupid. We're looking at all that. Marina, thanks for your call. Let's go to Scott in Urbandale, Iowa. Scott, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yes.
Just a quick comment. On the soldier issue, you know, it's hypothetical, of course.
Yep.
And your guest said it was war crimes to target civilians. Yet, why is there not an outcry on all the civilian deaths with these drone attacks? I mean, that's been in the thousands of people, hasn't it? Isn't that a little hypocritical? You know. They're not doing this with any other candidate. You know, I'm a 50-ish white male middle class.
Okay, okay.
And he is the only man who's at least throwing some ideas out there. You know, all the other politicians, you know, the ones I've seen in 35 years of following this, they talk a lot on the campaign trail, and then it poof. Goes away as soon as they get in the office.
Scott, you raise an interesting point there. Yep, I appreciate your call, Scott. Kathleen, how about it? I mean, we know that the Obama administration has ramped drone attacks up very substantially, and we know that there have been significant civilian deaths from those attacks, including women and children. Why don't you have a whole page devoted to Obama's drone policy and civilian deaths there?
Well, Tom, as you know well, the editorial page every day comments on politics and news events. We've certainly commented on the Obama administration's drone policy in the past. We have looked at, you know, so many elements. We've actually, in fact, this is our fourth anti-Donald Trump editorial that we've written. We endorsed John Kasich in the February New Hampshire primary. So this is just really one way that we are doing our jobs. We are commenting on the news through opinion, through editorial, to get people talking about what the future of America looks like under Donald Trump in the White House.
Are you going to do, Scott asked from Iowa, are you going to do a page like this on other candidates? Or are you going to imagine a you name it, Ted Cruz or Hillary Clinton or a Bernie Sanders reality imagined a year from now. I don't know. You can imagine making up some incendiary headlines around those, around emails or corporations saying they're leaving America. Or you could do it, will you?
Sure. We still have a long time leading up to the election in November, and I think time will tell. We're still on this story, and we're still reporting it out. And, you know, we don't have plans for that right now, but I wouldn't rule it out.
You've got one of the targets here, or headlines, is new libel law targets absolute scum in the press. And this is Donald Trump has, yes, he's called the press scum, and he's talked about vaguely, though, but has talked about how libel laws ought to be changed. Do you worry as a journalist that in a Trump administration you might not have the freedom, or you would be feel under some legal threat if you drafted a page like this?
Well, certainly. We think that Donald Trump, what he espouses is curtailing the freedom of press that we enjoy here in the United States. And, you know, again, we're trying to have a conversation here, a discussion, and anything that would curtail that or stop that is something that we find deeply troubling.
Justice in Dayton, Ohio. Justice, you're on the air.
Hi, I just wanted to comment on the issue of the military refusing orders. I'm enlisted in the military now, and we took an oath to uphold the lawful orders of the president and the officers appointed over us, but the operative word is lawful, and the orders that Donald Trump is talking about are decidedly unlawful, so we are duty-bound to refuse those orders.
And you understand that as your duty as a military man. What do you think of the Boston Globe putting it out there as imagining that and talking about the military refusing those orders? Does it upset you? Does it help you think about, or others think about, politics, do you think?
It doesn't upset me in the slightest. I do wish that news sources in general would stick to reporting the news and not so much commenting on it. But as a member of the military, no, I'm not offended or upset by what the Boston Globe ran.
You clearly know what the law is when it comes to military and orders, and I appreciate your call, Justice. Kathleen, what do you make of the response to all this? There's been quite a lot all across the country here. And yet, you know, I mean, the things you've got here, they're very eye-catching, but they certainly come from the meat of Mr. Trump's comments over time.
Yes, what we've seen over the last few months is a really toxic mix of violent intimidation, hostility to criticism, explicit scapegoating of minorities, especially based on religion. And we see a political movement taking hold that support those ideas.
What do you say to
it's
Americans who say
we really find appalling?
But listen to Scott. He's saying he's going for solutions that we need and nobody else is addressing them. We want him.
We just simply disagree.
Well, pretty effectively this time, at least in terms of drawing attention to what an imagined Trump presidency might look like. Full page in the Boston Globe. Deportations to begin as the lead headline. You can link to that, their editorial, at our website, onpointradio.org. Kathleen Kingsbury is deputy managing editor of the Globe's editorial page and editor of the ideas section. Kathleen, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
Listeners, thanks for joining us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR.